Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to Season 4 of the Behind the Scenes podcast, Soap from the Box. I'm Lee Salisbury, television director and producer and now podcaster, and we are back bigger and better, not only talking to the actors who play your favourite characters in EastEnders, Coronation Street, Emmerdale, Hollyoaks, Home and Away and Neighbours, which is also coming back to our screens, but also extra special Pop from the Box music guests and some huge TV and film specials. And don't just listen anywhere. To be VIP, you need to listen on the Another Slice podcast player. It's free to sign up to, and you'll get to hear exclusive audio and video clips you won't get anywhere else. And all the latest news from us directly lands in your inbox. This week, you get to hear an unedited, extended version of this episode for free over on Another Slice. Remember, there's also an extra special episode with EastEnders and I'm a Celebrity star, Jacqueline Josser. It's free to listen to. You just need to head to anotherslice.com/soapfromthebox and sign up with us. Sign up. It's going to be a huge year and we want you on the ride with us. You can also choose to subscribe for a couple of quid. You get even more special content, including the chance to ask your questions to the stars and get exclusive special episodes like Jacqueline Josser that will be for your ears only. You'll also be able to hear extended episodes and episodes before anyone else. Head to anotherslice.com/soapfromthebox. Right, come on, let's get going. Here's this week's episode. My guest today started her acting career by taking the theatre world by storm, including playing Tess in the play of the same name at the King's Head Theatre, which was 1989's Time Out's Critic Choice, and Sylvie in Stephen Berkoff's 25th anniversary production of East in London's West End. She is back treading the boards right now, currently playing Amelia in the Nationals production of Othello, but she is no stranger to soap fans. She spent 3 years in Channel 5's Family Affairs as Karen Ellis, a year in The Bill, and of course, many of us know her and love her as Rainey in EastEnders. She joined in 2007, playing the sister of Tanya, played of course by the formidable Jo Joyner. Rainey has certainly left her mark in EastEnders, and this lady made a mark in my working life as just being bloody fabulous. Please welcome Tanya Franks. Hello.
Hello, Lee. Hello. I'm really pleased to be here. It's lovely to talk to you.
It's lovely to be. Now, EastEnders, I mean, you are probably the most back and forth person I've ever kind of tried to research. You did a week long stint, first of all, in 2007. You were back in 2008, then 2010, 2014 to 2015. Quick guest appearance in 2018. Then you came back to 2022. So very, very in and out, wasn't it for you?
It's been absolutely mad. I mean, I literally in 2007, I came in for two episodes and that was all I knew at the time. And and then it just sort of followed on from there. Every few months or year or 2 years, I'd suddenly get a call to say, can Rainey come back for a bit of troublemaking? And
there you were. Really, it's probably a really nice way to do it, because obviously, as we know, some characters, if you're permanent there, you know, you can have a year of not doing much. But obviously, if you're coming back for kind of stints, you're always going to be involved in brilliant storylines.
Yeah, it's really been a wonderful part of my life, and it's also allowed me, of course, to do so many other shows as well, and so many other different genres of television and theatre, and I've really been able to keep the mix of everything going, and so the last 4 years in EastEnders was the longest stint that I'd ever committed to it, as it were, and I have to say it was really fun, really fabulous, and we really saw development in Rainey's journey.
Yes, yeah, that's the main thing, wasn't it? She really did develop.
She really did, and she sort of settled down to, dealing with her issues and her problems and her history, and became a mum, of course, and even though not a biological mum, but became a mum. And so, yeah, there's been quite a lot of development with her. So that's been really interesting for me to explore as well with Rainey.
When you went in, you said it was for a couple of episodes. Now, I found this little quote, which I love. The character was described as the slightly broken sister who's always one step away from a vodka bottle, which kind of did totally sum Rainey up. I mean, what were you told when you first joined about her?
I was told that she would be a drug addict, that she was very heavily into heroin at the time, and that she was coming in as just for two episodes to rock up as Tanya's sister. Yes, played by formidable Jo Joyner, of course, that gorgeous, gorgeous
Isn't
girl
she
that has a
lovely?
sister.
And actually, that's a good point quickly to say. I mean, joining that family, because I used to love working with Joe and Jake, and later becoming a Mitchell as well, obviously. I mean, what a family to join, wasn't it, as well, to go into?
Absolutely fantastic, and such lovely actors. And over the years, I've loved working with Jake as well. And it's been really just you really do conjoin as people. I think that show really does bring people together, and weirdly, it does feel like a community. So we are all part of the EastEnders community, and that's really something.
It is. So go back to what you were told. So basically, you kind of were told, because obviously you were in Family Affairs, which we'll quickly get to after this. But I mean, you were there for 3 years. So A, was it kind of a question whether to go to another soap? Because obviously we know nowadays it's much better for typecasting. I think that's leaving us. But was it a choice to, was it a, did you have to kind of make a decision?
Well, it was quite funny because when it came to the end of Family Affairs, so I remember someone saying to me, another actor in that show said to me, what would you really like to do after Family Affairs? And I said, I don't know. I think I'd like to play a professional in something, or a police officer or something. And I got cast in The Bill
Yeah,
straight after
wow.
Family
Yeah.
Affairs, which was quite funny. So I ended up doing that for about 15 months. When I was finishing Family Affairs, we actually had a producer who had been a very big producer on EastEnders, Jane Harris, and she was wonderful. She's a wonderful, wonderful producer. And she said to me, at some point, EastEnders will come knocking at your door.
Oh, really?
And she said, so just to say, give yourself a bit of time first and make sure you do lots of other things. And I said, okay, all right, that's interesting. Okay, I'll bear that in mind. And needless to say, they did. And it was 4 years later after I left Family Affairs. But actually, that 4 years in between really did give me time to do other shows. And in that time as well, I also did Pulling, which was
Oh yeah, we're gonna.
a
Oh God, we're gonna
comedy
come to that.
show.
That's one of my favorite shows ever.
So there was, things like that came in between. And then, of course, once I then did agree to, so I only agreed to two episodes
I
for
know. Wow.
EastEnders. And I think there was something in my head that said, oh, do I want to be another regular in a show or not? And so actually, two episodes sat very comfortably with me at that time because it wasn't an offer of a regular, it wasn't an offer of a long-term new character, and actually she has only intermittently become that, really. She's the most irregular regular that I've ever known her.
Yeah, she is. And I mean, when you say two episodes, because actually I find it, I suppose in a way, going into a soap, I think, is always quite hard to. I always say this, and actors say this, a lot of the work, even though the writers do a lot of work, then a lot of the work comes from the actor themselves to really formulate a character. Because a lot of the characterization of that character has been done sometimes before they actually cast the final person. But so it can be quite hard in a short space to really get across a character. Did you kind of work hard on, or were they, do you remember those first scripts? Were they quite brilliant in the fact that that character was signed, sealed and delivered?
Well, I think because she was very, you know, it was very much obviously stated that she was going through a drugs problem. And so, and I went in for a day to meet Joe before, and we sat down with the producer of that particular block, and we chatted and we talked about perhaps what the historical relationship would be. And because, I mean, bearing in mind, it was absolutely lovely, Lee, because it was a straight offer. I didn't have to audition,
yeah, which is brilliant, isn't it? I mean, for people out there listening,
a fantastic character.
For people out there listening, obviously, just to give them the insider's view. So normally, obviously, they come up with a character that you then start auditioning. You probably then have another round of auditions. They probably have screen tests with the cast, but an offer is basically when you just get offered it and you miss all of that.
It was absolutely amazing. And so from that point of view, I thought, well, as a character, she was a wonderful challenge for me. She, you know, she was so far removed from me, it's untrue. And I literally just thought, okay, well, this is great. This is a wonderful challenge of a character for me, but also allows me to explore, an area in our life, in our human life and society that I don't have contact with, I haven't been part of, and that's, you know, to dealing with looking at the area of people that go through drug problems and have to deal with those issues. And so it gave me a lot of exploration. It helped me to really research that. And they gave me a lot of support in researching. And so I was really very fortunate. I felt I was really not just learning something about an area of life that perhaps I hadn't experienced, but also I was representing an area of life that perhaps is not always understood. And so that felt like a wonderful opportunity to take on that responsibility, really, I guess, for want of a better word.
I think that's why soap's brilliant. I mean, we'll quickly describe I've come up with a kind of very, very short explanation of some of the stories you did. Stories for Rennie included sleeping with both brothers, Max and Jack Branning. Obviously, the drugs kept coming back. A crack cocaine story with Phil Mitchell, which is when I was there, which was so powerful. A custody battle with her mother, Cora Cross, played by the formidable Anne Mitchell as well. Feuded with Ben Mitchell. Kidnap baby Abby, more drug relapses, imprisonment for assaulting Kathy Beale, and taking over the funeral parlour quite near the end with husband, as we said, got married with Stuart Highway. So, I mean, as we know, life in Albert Square is never quiet, but Rainey was never quiet, basically.
No, she really has never been quiet.
Imagine if that was your life story. I mean, it's quite a depressing read, that, isn't it?
No, and yet weirdly exciting to play.
Yes, hugely exciting to play. That's why soap's brilliant, isn't it? Because, you know, a series, you'll kind of almost be playing, you know, in a series or a film, you know, you've got your character and that's that. Whereas in soap, the character can, like we said, go through so many changes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if you speak to a lot of actors that have been in soaps, they will say that you tend to explore more stories, more aspects of character than perhaps in any other genre of project that you'll ever do. And I think it is because there are so many twists and turns that they can give your character. And also, I guess as well, you know, she was a woman that had troubles that needed to be sorted, that she was either going to deal with her demons or not deal with her demons. And so there were areas there that could be explored, could be opened up, could see a future with perhaps going through rehab, various different ways of looking at Rainey. And also, you know, there were many pieces of her life that needed to be put back together. And I mean, it remains to be seen if we'll ever see any other pieces of her life.
And actually, one of the most interesting things, I suppose, is that family you join, because actually Joe Joyner, the character of Tanya, had been well established. And actually, that's a side, I think, we don't see often on, you know, the effect on the family. And there's a lot of families out there that will be dealing with having someone like Rainey in the mix. And actually, that's such an interesting thing that I think, you know, when it's in your house every day, really allowed that story to play out in a way that probably really connected to people at home.
Yes, and I think as well, you know, it means that I had said at the time that if it helps a family or helps people to actually think about what is happening to someone that they love, or perhaps to themselves, and perhaps be able to deal with issues and problems that may not be easy for them, then if it opens that up to them, then it's an amazing thing. And I do think shows like EastEnders, but I can only really speak for EastEnders, and that is, they, when they do those subject matters, I think they tend to do them very, very well.
They do, yeah. Well, we often work, yeah, don't we, with big organisations and stuff as well to get the proper advice.
Absolutely, you get the support. So I had somebody that was an ex-addict with me on set, and he would literally take me through the come down. And
oh, that's brilliant.
Yeah, it was amazing. So there was a lot of representation of as close to real life as you can get within the confines of artistry or storytelling, or it being a fictitious scenario, you know. So, and yeah, I mean, really, really wonderful.
It fell under some heavy criticism as well. I mean, that's when I was kind of there. And I know Steve, you know, is a formidable actor as well, and was very, you know, very in the moment. I mean, obviously not method. He wasn't taking crack cocaine, but, you know, really takes these things seriously. But it came under quite heavy criticism that you stood up for. I mean, these things, I suppose, always do, don't they, as well? But it's an important part that you have to show. I mean, some, you know, a lot of people saying it's too heavy for EastEnders, but actually this is real life, you know, and that's what soap's trying to portray.
Absolutely. And I think both Steve and we did work together, I thought, very well at that time.
Oh, you did. It was brilliant.
I'll say at that time, I think we always have done whenever we've worked together. And he's in some ways we're quite similar as actors. We work quite in the moment. We both work quite animalistically, quite instinctively. And it was
magic, yeah, actually, on screen when yeah. I love actors that work like that. You never quite know when you arrive at set as director how it's going to go, which is how the whole process should be, I think. You know, it's a whole circle of people joining in and making something in the
absolutely
moment.
Absolutely. There's a dynamic that grows and an energy that grows between people, and you want to capture that. And, you know, things come out of the moment. And I think both his exploration, my exploration, it was, you know, it was storytelling. And what was quite interesting was how people actually complained about the fact that we were shown taking crack cocaine on screen, particularly before the watershed. But actually, we didn't show taking it. We didn't actually take it on screen. And so that's the power of the storytelling, that it can put that into the imagination of audience that yes. they think they've seen. And yeah. And that was actually what the complaints were about. So, you know, to me, that is where the power is, right there.
No, that is where the power is. And like we said, EastEnders, I mean, what a formidable, I mean, I've done all the soaps, obviously, but EastEnders was the one I was probably most nervous about, because I'd watched it when I was young, you know, just walking on Albert Square. The old Albert Square was kind of like momentous. It's weird, isn't it, because you've done so much stuff, but things, because it's so in our psyche, a show like EastEnders, and you being on screen must have been especially joining at first for two episodes, must have been a nerve-wracking. It must be I mean every actor says every job is still nerve-wracking. I mean, it must have been nerve-wracking still walking on that set. Do you remember it?
Well, the funny thing was I actually appeared in EastEnders, I think it was in 1991.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, as another character for just five lines, with a scene, I think it was four lines or something like that, with a scene with Doc Cotton.
Oh, wow. Oh, with brilliant June.
And that was much more nerve-wracking than coming in and playing Rainey, because that was the point where I actually walked on Albert Square for the very first time.
Wow.
And then, of course, I didn't go back. I mean, you know, Rainey was a completely separate.
Yeah. And with June Brown as well, because who obviously was brilliant. But again, you know, working with her is what a brilliant thing to and nerve-wracking thing to go in and do.
Yeah, so I just turned up and did these five lines, and that was much more nerve-wracking than actually stepping into the shoes of Rainey, funnily enough. When it came to Rainey, I was a much more experienced actor by that time. I'd had much more television experience by that time, and so really it was very much, I was excited by the character. I was excited by taking on the challenge of the character. And so, therefore, that's what I enjoyed.
And then we have to mention Anne Mitchell, actually, because she's someone who joined who I just fell in love with. And it's a shame she didn't stay around for longer, actually, because that Cora was a great character, wasn't she? And when she joined as your mum, it must always be great when you hear who's going to play your mum.
Yes. Yeah, it really was. And her and I worked very well together and liked working together, enjoyed it. Again, she's somebody that works quite spontaneously in the moment. She's obviously, you know, there's a lot of preparation that we do. But at the same time, we were able to do some prep work together. And a wonderful character that she created there. So it was a good family dynamic. Her, myself, and the character of Tanya was a good family trio.
And then, I mean, she got involved with many people around the square. I mean, there was obviously, I remember as well, one of the big, big EastEnders stories was when Lucy Beale got murdered and Ian had been getting calls from a mysterious R in his phone, which then got revealed that was Rainey, who was actually he had seen as a prostitute. I mean, that was obviously one of those calls you got saying, right, we want her back. And again, that must have been like, wow, this is another side to her to experience.
Well, I had known in the past when Rainey was, when she very, very first came in on heroin, you know, she was turning tricks at that point. So we did already know that she used prostitution as a way of making money to supply, to actually get drugs and not supply drugs, sorry, to get drugs. And so therefore, I knew that was part of her history. That was already part of her lifestyle.
I suppose it was more the shock that it was Ian Beale that had been.
It was with Ian Beale. Yeah. And then, of course, and it was also at that point as well that she managed to frame Mick, Danny Dyer's character as well at that time too. So it was, it's fun. And you work with so many of the different actors, different characters. Everybody brings their own thing to it. And,
yeah, it's very different, isn't it? Whenever I used to find, you know, you'd have a day with the Brannings and maybe a day then with the Mitchells over at the Vic. And each day was very different because the groups of actors work very differently as well, I think, on shows like that.
Yes, and I think because of that, because of the eclectic mix of characters, there's not an overall style of acting.
No,
or an overall,
no.
You find what it is between you in that moment. But of course, you know those characters. You know what the personality of those characters are, and both as actors and the character that they're playing. So it's, you know, it's fun. You step in and out of each other's shoes, and that's quite wonderful there.
And did you, Neil McDermott, actually, who played Ryan, said a really interesting thing on series one of Soap in the Box, was that he watched it before he joined, because especially in TV, every show's got kind of a different level of acting. You know, you could play things too big or too small. Did you do anything like that? Did you watch it kind of trying to work out where Rainey was going to fit? Do you know what I mean? Because I think soap is finding a place.
I do. No, I didn't, actually. I didn't do that. I work very much on the instinct of character, very much on going for the truth of the character. And, it's very much for me about formulating what the truth is. And if you can truthfully tell the story as truthfully as you possibly can, then to me, that's any job that I do. That's what I will always bring to a project. That's what challenges me. That's the challenge I love.
And the excitement of it. Yeah.
That's the part of my job that I would say is my key to my profession. So therefore, I approached it in very much the same way as I always do. And I didn't worry about style. I didn't worry about, how she was going to look.
And that's the interesting thing, isn't it? Because everyone does approach things so differently, which makes life exciting on shows like that.
Yeah. And I also think as well that, you know, when that storyline came up with Steve, for example, they called me and asked me to go back to what the story would entail. And my question was, do you think that Steve and I will work well together? Because I knew it was going to be very intense. And I wanted to know from the producers that they trusted that myself and Steve would work well together. And of course, it did, it seemed to. And we did work well together and we enjoyed working together. So, but I did ask that question first of all, because I think if you're going to take on important stories, then you need to make sure that all the elements fit.
Work. Yeah. And that's what I suppose you don't get when on shows, like, you know, you haven't got that screen test or that, you know, you might have a read around the table. You know, it's kind of got to work straight away, hasn't it, when you're on set. But yeah. Final bit about Ray. I mean, you then went back, which is really sad because obviously Abby, brilliant Lorna, died and her life support was turned off. Another point, you went back. Sad. I was always sad that they did that to Lorna's character, actually, because she was brilliant. You know, when you think, in soap, when people were killed off, you think you get to return and you just think it closes off those avenues, doesn't it? Which is a shame sometimes.
Yes, it does. And I guess sometimes they choose to do certain things for certain stories or to move other characters in certain ways or whatever it may be. But it was a shame because she obviously we'd seen that character grow up.
And she was coming into her own, I think, as well, Lorna,
she? Yeah, she was. And it was sad. And I guess as well as a professional auntie, sort of going in and going through that story was sad. I mean, you know, Rainey was to be around the bed, the hospital bed, and that's what she came in for. And then, of course, you know, the next stint was just a few weeks later. I went back then to...
Marry Max. Yes. As you do. And obviously you've now gone again. Well, it's obviously the door's open and I'm assuming that we can't say never to you going back again.
Yeah, I have absolutely no idea. It's I always, when I walk out of those gates, in my head, I always think I'm walking out for the last time. And I don't know how many times I've walked back into them again. So it's I never say never with that show. And if it is a never again, well, then it's also been a wonderful
journey. It's been brilliant. And how is, you're the first person I've had on for a while from EastEnders who's worked on the new set. I haven't been. What is the new set like?
It was very weird going in actually for the very first time because, of course, it is a replica of the old set. However, there's additions to it.
Yeah.
And there's also better areas for the actors to wait in and that sort of thing as well. There's actually green rooms and things that where are warmer than actually how it used to be.
Standing in the empty Vic with the, you know, drips dripping on you and stuff.
Absolutely. So in that way, it's nicer. And it was amazing because you did walk on and it was disconcerting.
Double take, yeah.
Because you're so used to working in one particular direction from your dressing room to go to the back lot. And then suddenly you're walking in a completely different direction, but it still feels like you're ending up in the same place.
What I always loved about EastEnders was even though... you know, I would say the facilities at Coronation Street are probably a bit better for the actors and dressing rooms, but I love the little gold plates on the door. You had a gold plate, I'm taking it, on your door.
That's right, yes, yeah.
And character name, which I love.
Yes, and I think because she's still alive, you know, they
it's
take
still
them
there.
And
they haven't,
the
they haven't, they haven't sold it off yet.
No, they haven't sold it off. They put it, I think they keep them in the office. They put them in a file and wait for, see if your character ever comes back again.
Well, I know every EastEnders fan out there will be dying for Rainey to go back. So obviously watch this space. Now we're going to move on to, you've done so much other work. And I do this with most guests and most people don't remember hardly anything. Just to get through some of the roles, I'm going to see if you remember who you played in some of the things. We obviously know you were Karen Ellis in Family Affairs. We'll touch on that in a minute. In The Bill, do you remember your DCI name?
DCI Morell.
Yes, that's correct. You were then in Holby City for an episode called Live and Let Die. Do you remember who you played in that?
No, can't remember the character's name.
Tina Papworth.
I'd have to look on IMDb.
Yeah, that's what I've got that in front of me, so don't get that up, otherwise you're cheating. But Tina Papworth in that. Doctors.
Oh, yeah. I can't remember the character's name, but that was a great little character because she was a little shriveling violet that then came out of herself when she did Marilyn Monroe impersonations in a club.
Yeah, brilliant.
It was a great little character to play.
Juliet Nichols, she was.
Like one episode guest roles.
Yeah, which are always nice, aren't they? That's nice. Juliet Nichols. Yeah, then we move, obviously, to Pulling. You obviously know who you played in that.
Karen.
I mean, we watched that. I remember we started watching that a couple of Christmases ago and kind of binge watched it. And I absolutely loved it. So you were the promiscuous, raunchy, aggressive primary school teacher. obviously, it was a series written by Sharon Horgan, who is one of my idols. I mean, that must have been a dream job to get.
Well, it also was as well, because it was, I mean, the scripts were absolutely fantastic.
Amazing, yeah.
Very funny. And it was written by Sharon Horgan and Dennis Kelly. And Dennis Kelly wrote, has written Matilda. So, you know, he wrote that with Tim Minchin. And so he's also a wonderful, wonderful writer. And as soon as I read that character, I just went, oh, my goodness.
She was brilliant. She, I mean, again, your character was brilliant and you were so fantastic different. In it.
Thank you. And she was so different from me. Karen is so different from yeah. me. And so it was also one of those where I just thought, gosh, if I can pull this off, this is fantastic, because that's what interests me. Characters that are very challenging or different to me really interest me. They tend to be the ones that I get drawn to. So to have been able there was a lot of people that went up for that role and for that show.
I bet.
And so I was absolutely, yeah, I mean, I was over the moon when I was offered that.
And
character.
It must be nice, because you say, obviously, so different than you, but that's the great thing about acting. I'm sure loads of us, you know, us, whoever plays, you know, bitches and stuff, where they get to go into work and be completely unlike they would ever be, you know, like Emma yeah. Atkins, who plays Charity in Emmerdale, exactly like this, the nicest person. But it must be kind of quite... lethargic when you get to go and kind of be lethargic. This person you never would do yourself, but what fun being able to do it and get paid for it.
Well, absolutely, you know, you get to explore different psyches of the human existence that you wouldn't necessarily find yourself party to. And also in my particular area of having played certain characters, it's less dangerous for me. I can do it professionally and not have to do it in my personal life.
Yes.
I don't think I would survive. So
she was a piece of work, wasn't she, Karen? She was brilliant. And what was it like, obviously Sharon was one of the main three girls in it as well. I mean, had you ever worked with an actor who had also obviously has got so much control of the series? Was that kind of what was that experience like?
Yeah, no, I don't think I had before. I think that might have been the first time. And, it's wonderful to have somebody on set, of course, that knows the background to the scripts, because if you have any questions, you've got someone right there.
Straight there, yeah.
And also, it's a great guide too, because they see in their head already how they would like it to be. And so... you know, it's kind of nice, because you do have almost like a professional support system right there with you, and you're working with them.
Which is brilliant, but is that weird as another actor? Because normally other actors don't, you know, it's quite, in a way, it's quite not the thing to do to give another actor notes, isn't it? So is it...
But I think, you know, in the circumstance of where the other actor is also a producer of the show and also a writer of the show, you know, it's credit where that is due. And that is absolutely, their opinion counts as much as in some ways the directors. And the director of that, you know, who I still remain very, very, very good friends with. And he was, I really used to turn to him as a director, because I think playing comedy on television is quite different than playing it live, of course, because you don't have the audience reaction.
Yeah.
So when you're doing comedy live, you hear whether it works or not. Of course, on television, I literally used to look to the director at the end of every take
to see if he's laughing.
Please tell me, did that work? Because, of course, you just didn't have the audience reaction in the same way. And, of course, they can't laugh, because, you can't
ruin the take. Yeah.
Laughter going on in the background.
I mean, so, it did so well. It won BAFTA for Best Comedy Series. You were nominated at the British Comedy Awards in 2009. What a series. What a great... And, again, such a departure from everything else you've done, isn't it? I mean, the character may be some similar traits to Rainey, but, I mean, just such a different... It was just groundbreaking, that show.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
She's very clever, isn't she, Sharon, at kind of honing in on these aspects of real life in so many different
Absolutely,
ways.
I
love Divorce, actually, as well. But let's quickly mention Family Affairs as well. It's long gone now, unfortunately. It's not a show I actually watched, but you arrived there in 2000, stayed for 3 years. Again, quite a lot of big stories. You had breast cancer. We dealt with infertility, surrogacy, child custody battle. How was it different than EastEnders Family Affairs? Well, I suppose you were newer and fresher, so it was very different for you.
It was actually cervical cancer. It was it wasn't breast cancer. It was cervical
cancer. Okay, sorry.
That's all right. But that also led to the surrogacy story in that, which is quite ironic that then all these years.
Rainy, yes, yeah.
Surrogacy story in EastEnders, but that was my first big leap into television, Family Affairs, because although I had done that one very tiny episode of EastEnders, that very tiny stint of four or five lines in EastEnders in 1991, that wasn't a break in television, if you know what I mean.
No, yeah, yeah.
So, and that was one tiny moment in 14 years of continuous theatre. So when I went into Family Affairs was my television break. And I was quite nervous about being in a long-running show. I didn't know that that was something that I wanted to do, and I was quite nervous of that at the time. However, when I look back, I'm so pleased that I did, because also at the time, Family Affairs was on Channel 5, and Channel 5 had only just started, and a lot of the country didn't see Channel 5.
Yes,
so
yeah.
I was able to cut my teeth on camera.
Without being seen by too many people.
About 900,000 viewers rather than millions. And so in some ways, I was able to explore a little bit more what it was to work with a camera and not feel that I was having to live up to a massive critique, you know.
Expectation. Because that's the thing. Yeah, it's a great training ground for every job, behind the scenes and in front of the scenes, because I suppose working on camera, unlike stage, again, it's the little things, isn't it? It's like you do need to hit a mark, and you don't need to get in other people's lighting, because the lighting's not like it is on film. It's very, you know, broad sense lighting. And those little things, which normally you don't think, like you said, you want to be in the moment, but actually they're the little kind of skills that you need to pick up quite quickly, aren't they? I still would never be able to hit a mark without looking down, but it's kind of one of those little skills you have to get used to.
You do. You just learn it, and you learn it with practice, and you learn it over the years. So, yeah, it's, you know, that I'm very thankful for that job. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so leaving Family Affairs behind, let's get back to the little quiz. Let's have a couple more here. So, obviously, EastEnders, Rainy Cross. You were in the Cup. Do you remember who you played in the Cup?
God.
No, sorry, no one does. It's like an act. You learn lines and then respond. Do you know what I mean?
It was, let me have, what was her name? Sandra.
Yes, Sandra Farrell. Woohoo! You've done better than most people. And then, I mean, you've gone on to do some amazing series. You've been in Broadchurch, Ashes to Ashes, some of the biggest, Pram Face, which is absolutely brilliant, Chewing Gum, Vera. What's it like, again, like things like Vera? What's it like going in? Did you work with the brilliant Brenda Blethyn?
I did.
Oh, amazing. I mean, incredible. What's it like going into a big series like that again as a kind of, as a guest part?
Yeah, again, in some ways, I think it's almost harder to go in as a guest role than it is to go in as a new regular in a show or a new semi-reg or something, because everything is there, you know, the program knows what it is, all the formula is in place, you're only going to be there for a very short period of time. So she was absolutely lovely to me.
She's amazing, isn't she? I love
her. Yeah, we chatted, and she was, you know, she was great energy and kind, and so there's I think it really does warrant the regulars on shows to help the guest artist to feel comfortable.
Yes, because often in soap you can see guest actors feeling quite uncomfortable, because I suppose people come and go, and some of the lead cast just forget, I think, to do that. And actually, it's so important.
Yes, it's really important, because guest artists are just stepping in. They're coming in to do one episode. They've been cast for one particular character because they feel the producers and directors feel they're right for it. However, they will be there for a short period of time, and you want to get the best performance possible out of that actor, and you want them to feel as comfortable as possible, and you want them to have a nice time. I always hope that when I'm a regular in a show and I have a guest artist come in, I always hope that when that actor walks away from the show, that they at least feel that they've had a day or two or a week or whatever it might have been with us, having enjoyed it, having enjoyed hopefully working with me and other actors around me, and that it will be a nice memory for them and something that they will have actually got something from.
I always
you
say
don't want it. Think... You don't want them to feel bad or about it or feel alienated.
They felt ignored or they didn't get a chance to do their best, you know, either.
Absolutely.
I always think, I look back and just think, I think the biggest show for me, imagine being a guest actor going into Friends back in the day. That must have been so nerve-wracking.
You know, and I also think as well, the other thing is when you are a regular in a show and the guest artists come in, they actually bring in a new energy with them.
Totally,
which
yeah.
Which keeps you on your toes too. I find that quite thrilling because it's quite easy to find your way. You know your formula, you know your character, you know quite often the sound of the scripts, as it were. So then when somebody else comes in, there's a new spark, a new thing that you have to play with, a new energy that you have to bounce off. And that's quite exciting because it keeps you fresh too.
Yeah. And also you never know when those guest actors like you will become a full-time part of the show as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. 100%. 100%. No, and then Broadchurch, everybody plays their part. So
exactly.
I have to mention
Broadchurch with you because that was kind of like a phenomenon, wasn't it? It kind of just took off and like sparks. It must be great to be part of those shows as well that just suddenly go insane.
Yeah. I mean, that was again something so completely different. I mean, if you think of Pulling and you think of EastEnders and you think of these other shows that I've done, you know, to then also be able to do such great high drama, as you know, I feel very, very honored and very thankful that I've been able to get these opportunities.
So many things. Well, the TV CV is brilliant. Obviously, you started, like we said, in theatre. We're going to talk about Othello, which you're doing at the moment, which sounds just fantastic. I've got to come and see it. But you were born in Plumstead. I mean, was acting something that was, you know, inbred in you from a young age? Had you always wanted to act?
I did always want to act. I wanted to act from a child. And I loved it at school. And I also... my father was a lighting cameraman, actually.
He started
as a photographer and then he became a lighting cameraman or a DOP, director of photography. And although he didn't give me any ins, if you know what I mean. There was no footage in because of him. But when I was very tiny, he had me in a couple of short films that he made. And I was sort of aged 2 or something, or 3, or, you know, I was very young. And I think at 6 months, I was actually pushed down a pram in one of his short films.
Got the bug quite early.
There was probably a bug that was instilled from a very early age in that way. However, I then went through school quite normally doing plays at school as you do, but I knew that I wanted to join a local theatre. I knew that I wanted to explore that more, and I became quite ambitious to become an actor. And
which you need to be, I think, as well, actually, for people listening out there. I think you need that. I mean, I used to act when I was younger and actually thought, oh, I'm not quite ambitious enough to make it. Do you know what I mean? Because I'll work behind the scenes. Because you need that real, you know, it's a hard industry, as we know. And you really need to be committed to making it, don't you?
Yeah. And that insecurity is, you have to take it on. And I met Glenda Jackson when I was just leaving secondary school. And, you know, she was a Hollywood star. She was a film star. She was a great British actress and very prominent. And she said to me, you know, be prepared to be unemployed 80% of the time. And I remember hearing that. It was the best words that I ever heard at the age of 15, because I remember thinking, okay, I'll take that on board. But in my head, I switched it and I went, I'll do everything I can to make sure that I'm unemployed 20% of the time. Which actually encouraged, I sort of infused myself.
Gave you like a baton to run with.
Yeah. And I used to produce my own shows when I first came out of drama school. I would put my own shows on the Fringe Theatre, the London Fringe. And I did that for quite some time, for quite some years. I'd go backwards and forwards to putting on my own shows in between jobs. And yeah, so there's been a lot of hard work in it. However, I would definitely say that hard work has paid off.
Paid off, yeah.
And I still have as much enthusiasm and tenacity and energy for it as I did when I first started.
I love my work. Yeah, that's the thing with us. I think when you love it, that stays with you forever, doesn't it? And doing your own stuff actually keeps the momentum going and keeps you positive and feeling good as well in times that you aren't actually being employed. So I think that's a great tip.
Well, I think it's also a mental thing where you turn around and say, actually, if somebody's paying you, is that the only time that it counts as you being employed?
Yes.
Well, sometimes the investment in yourself is also you employing yourself. And I think that's important, that sometimes by creating your own work or creating projects or creating ideas is an investment in yourself. Somebody else may not be paying you, but in my head, I'm still being employed by myself. Yeah.
And you are, you're paying yourself. You're paying yourself.
You're paying yourself. It's an investment of your time and your energy. And so therefore, and money that comes from that, fantastic. But if it doesn't, you've certainly employed yourself with your own energy and your time.
Yeah, no, that's a great tip. And that's a great for people to take on board, actually. And obviously, there's so much theatre work you've done. You've been in some of the greatest theatres. Obviously, now at the moment, you're at the National, which I know is a dream for so many actors. Yeah. It's a new version of Othello. Clint Dyer's directed it, who's done Death of England parts 1, 2, and 3, amongst many other things. Some great actors in it. The reviews are stunning. I mean, it's basically a whole new take, isn't it, of Othello?
It is. And I mean, this is the fourth production I've done at the National. I haven't been there since, I think it was 2010 was the last time I was there. And it's so lovely to be back. And literally, I mean, this came up a week after me leaving the last
Amazing.
Contract to the EastEnders, so which was extraordinary. I didn't know it was going to be in the ether at all. You know, I had no idea. Came right out of the blue. And so it's really fantastic to step back into that building again. And yes, it's a completely new look at Othello from the point of view of taking the script and saying, what is it really truly about?
Yes, yeah.
And, you know, Clint was very clear that he wanted to really tackle racism in it. We also tackle very strongly misogyny in it. And this is all in the script. This is nothing that we've added on. It's there. But quite often it gets overlooked or other topics get taken over. And, you know, I think it's a new raw take on it. And
that's exciting.
Very proud of it. Very proud of it. And I think it's epic. And once you're on the roller coaster of it, you have to keep moving with it. It's quite fast paced in that way. Very, very much loving it. Very much enjoying it.
And
I love the character.
I'm definitely going to come and see you in 1964, actually, is where they obviously the National staged Othello with Laurence Olivier. I mean, the history is just incredible. Does it strike you that you're on in the same place, you know, as when?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, it is truly one of the greatest theatres in the world, the National Theatre. There's no question about it. And so I'm very honoured to be back there. You know, and there is the thing, of course, politically, when Laurence Olivier played it, there was the thing of it was blackface, and we, you know, this is something that needs to be tackled, and we
yes,
are addressing
yeah which
that
is
in,
what this new production
in
does
history
yeah.
We are addressing that, and it was very important for Clint to address that, and he's, you know, remarkably, I mean, this should not be the case, but he is the first black director to be directing Othello in a major
wow.
London theatre ever.
Wow.
The first black director. And, you know, we shouldn't have come to surely all this time.
We should have been in 2022. No, it's insane.
However,
isn't it?
You know, he's taken it on. It's taken him a long time to get this project on. He's been devoted to getting this project on for about the last 20 years.
Wow.
And he's finally managed to do it. So it's, you know, it's a passion project as well.
Yeah,
very
well, incredible.
So.
And
I'm, I mean, very honest, sounds,
and the reviews are fantastic. So everyone go and see that why you can. I mean, it just sounds brilliant.
Yeah,
even I read there's even kind of old posters of old productions projected at the beginning as well.
Mm. Yeah, the projection is very much looking at, it looks at the posters of a lot of the historic productions. So yeah, you see all that at the very beginning, and that's really wonderful. It brings it. It says, you know, and this is 2022. Yeah. This is our production. This is the production for today.
It's been a pleasure to have you on Soap from the Box, Tanya.
It's been a joy.
Your work, I mean, so many things that I've loved you in. You're just so brilliant. It's amazing. So thank you for coming on and sharing some stories of those. And if you haven't, by the way, everyone, watch Pulling. It's a series that's great for Christmas and New Year. Go and binge watch that. It's absolutely fantastic.
I think you can put it on iPlayer still.
Yeah, we started watching it, like I said, and we couldn't stop. I think we watched them all in one go. It was incredible. I loved it. I do love that you can binge watch now. It's great, isn't it?
Yeah, it's wonderful.
We will speak to you soon. And EastEnders fans out there, you'll never know if Mysterious R will be back. So keep watching. You'll know when, you'll know probably just a few weeks after Tanya knows.
Yes, probably.
Speak to you later.
Right, so great to talk to you. Bye-bye. Bother me, don't bother me,
How amazing to have Tanya on season 4 of Soap from the Box. If you want to hear the unedited version with some extra content, get the whole show by joining up for free to us on the Another Slice podcast player. Just sign up over there on anotherslice.com/soapfromthebox. You can also hear a full special episode with EastEnders star Jacqueline Josser, which you can only hear on Another Slice for free when you sign up. You can also press subscribe, and just for a few quid, you have access to so much more. I'll be back same time, same place next week. Thank you for joining us on season 4 of Soap from the Box. Have a great week. Bye.